I am Nkosinathi Ndlovu, and this is the Tech Central Show. TCS is brought to you by MTN Business. Visit www.mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more. Cape Town-based medtech startup AI Diagnostic recently raised 85 million rand to fund the deployment of its AI-powered digital stethoscope. The company hopes to use the device to reduce the cost of diagnosing tuberculosis and also eliminate the high number of misdiagnoses that occur. Here to tell us more about the company is Brendan van Bladar. He is the CEO of AI Diagnostic. Hello, Brendan. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me here.
It's only a pleasure. It's only a pleasure. Brendan, congratulations on the 85 million rand funding round. For the listener hearing the name AI Diagnostic for the first time, could you tell us what the company does and why you believe it's important?
Sure. So we've developed a tuberculosis diagnostic or screening tool, which combines an AI model specifically trained on identifying tuberculosis with a digital stethoscope, which acquires patients' lung sounds for the model to function. It's important because tuberculosis is still the greatest infectious disease killer globally, which is quite astounding. It's been top of the list for literally centuries. COVID-19 took it out of its number one position for a little period, for a couple months, but it's back at the top, which, to be honest, is a little bit disgraceful. That we've allowed a disease to affect humanity for such a long time. And you know, that's really the main reason why we've decided to focus on tuberculosis first as our first disease of targeting early detection. And yeah, I think it's also just it's an opportunity for an African-based company to solve what's primarily a disease prevalent in sub-Saharan Africa and South and Southeast Asia in the developing markets.
So Brendan, I mean, when I picture a stethoscope, I see a loopy device that a doctor hangs around their neck. Your device looks a little different. Could you tell us more about it?
Sure. So our digital stethoscope, I don't know if there are any we'll be looking at it visually, but it's just a simple unit that captures lung sounds only. It doesn't deliver that audio to the user. And this is partly because of the user that we're targeting. We're targeting nurses and community health workers as our primary user. And the stethoscope is really the tool which collects the lung sounds accurately and is able to send it to our AI model. And so it's designed around robustness and focused utility on tuberculosis screening.
So you mentioned a little bit about choosing TB as kind of your first point, your first disease that you want to attack. I mean, there are other diseases, I think they're called diseases of affluence, where there are a lot more potentially paying customers. Why TB?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it comes from the founder's mission in a way. You know, our mission is to create accessible disease detection tools for those who need it most. And that last bit of that mission is really where tuberculosis stands out. It typically affects populations that are poorer countries, poorer communities. That's where tuberculosis is most rife, and that's where the biggest healthcare gap is. So, it seemed like the appropriate place to apply our skills first. And then also South Africa has got significant tuberculosis research programs. It's got a huge amount of key opinion leaders in tuberculosis, and it's been a research hub for TB for a couple of decades now. So from developing for tuberculosis out of South Africa is a very it's actually an advantage being here and developing this product for TB, really knowing the context.
So let's get into how the technology actually works. You said that you have a device and it speaks to an AI model. Does this mean that the clinician using the device would have to have maybe a phone or a tablet alongside? How do they use it?
Correct. So I'll actually start with the connection to tuberculosis and lung sounds. I think that's the first place to start. TB affects your lungs, and your immune system responds to TB in relatively repeatable ways. And you can see these reactions to the disease in x-rays relatively well. X-ray is quite good at screening for tuberculosis. You can see these structural changes. And it was our hypothesis that these structural changes would also cause different sounds when air passes through it. And that was sort of the leap of faith we made initially in developing the product. And once we had collected enough data and built our first AI model, did we see how good the models are at identifying these sounds and associating it with tuberculosis. But how the product works, or at least the flow of it, is the user, typically a community health worker or a nurse or even a pharmacist, has our digital stethoscope and connects it via Bluetooth to their phone, which has our app on it. Then the app guides the nurse or community health worker through a couple key questions that they enter asking the patient, which things like their HIV status and their gender and age, which help the model contextualize the audio that it's going to be receiving. They then, the app then guides the nurse on where to place the stethoscope. And there's a breathing guide that helps the patient breathe consistently to capture a very consistent piece of audio. The app then sends all of this clinical information and audio to our AI model, which is called Aid.tb, which then analyzes all that information and provides a prediction back to the app. And that's where the app then displays what that healthcare practitioner should do with the patient, send them for bacteriological confirmation of disease or rule out tuberculosis, essentially.
And in terms of efficacy, how effective has this proven to be?
So our efficacy is aligned with x-ray-based screening, but naturally far superior than the most predominant screening system, which is symptom-based screening. And I think really where the major value proposition is against the x-ray-based screening is for the same clinical value, you're able to conduct a screening with significantly cheaper hardware. But mainly, you're able to shift the screening responsibility from a radiologist to a community health worker, which is obviously a far more abundant resource, healthcare resource that we have in South Africa and sub-Saharan Africa as a whole. Our screening process takes about 3 minutes from start to finish, which is similar to setting up for an x-ray.
Then TB positive lungs are not a data set that you can just go, you know, onto the web and download. Where did you get the data to train your models?
Yeah, it's a very informed question, that. And you're completely right. And I'll draw back to this comparison with x-ray. X-ray has historically been recorded. So there are hospitals that sit with these huge databases of annotated x-rays. And so there were a lot of manufacturers that went to build these models on x-ray because the data was available. In our case, there wasn't. Auscultation or lung sound recordings are not typically recorded, and especially for tuberculosis positive and negative patients. So we had to build that data set from scratch, and that's now sort of our primary IP. And that's the place to start when you're developing any custom specific AI model. So we actually did that in the Western Cape, is where most of our training data came from. It was during towards the tail end of COVID-19. So naturally the research and Department of Health divisions didn't want additional access to clinic facilities to reduce spread of disease and things. So they actually didn't allow us to conduct the study in the state clinics. What they did allow us is to recruit from the state facilities. So people that had just been tested for tuberculosis, whether positive or negative, because both are important to expose to the model. So we hired out a space in a shopping mall in Mitchell's Plain, and which is an area with a lot of tuberculosis and other settlements around the area that are high tuberculosis prevalent areas. And then we recruited from 33 clinics, Western Cape Department of Health clinics and City of Cape Town clinics, recruited patients to this single site, which has actually proved to be really advantageous being able to have one central place. We had highly trained data collectors, but being able to get patients from all these different areas and across a bunch of different demographics as well, which is also really useful for model generalizability. Anyway, in this setup for a year and a half, we ran this data collection study. Cost us quite a bit of time and money and hair loss, but it was it's really built the base of our IP, and we collected the largest TB validated lung sound database in the world, which we then used to train our first TB detection AI model.
I imagine, though, that as you have these different patients coming in, you spoke about different demographics. You've got different genetics coming through. Some people have thicker skin, thicker chest. Some people are heavier. Some people are thinner, are taller. There could be a lot of noise introduced into your data. How did you ensure that you could hone in exactly on the tuberculosis diagnosis?
Yeah, spot on. So what you want when training these disease detection models, you want to train it with as diverse a population as possible. And the model actually learns to ignore this noise, things that are not indicative of TB. So for instance, if you only have a few chronic smokers in your data set, the model might, confuse it with TB indicative sounds initially, but the more smokers that are TB negative that you have on the database, the more it understands what are, smoking indicative sounds and what are tuberculosis indicative sounds, and then able to sort of manage the difference between chest wall thickness and weight, etc., those variations. Similar to how a trained physician, is able to remove that kind of variation from their decision making. Similar how a model, as it's exposed to more data, gets better at understanding what is true signal and what is actually noise.
It sounds then, from what you're saying, that while you're building a model for one specific thing, you're actually also building a model at the same time that can diagnose other problems as well. Could you tell us about where you could branch out in future using the database that you've built as kind of the base?
So you're right. You almost have different levels of understanding that we're training the model. Like, first is just understanding audio and classifying audio. It's sort of the first cognitive leap you need the model to make. And there are a lot of like base architectures that have already done this on sort of YouTube videos and things to kind of understand audio. Then understanding auscultation or lung sound, stethoscope recorded audio is the next step, and being able to classify in that, and then, fine tuned to tuberculosis or not tuberculosis is really, the final step. So all the general stethoscope data that we've collected is all useful in training our models on how to interpret lung sounds well. But we would still need to collect disease-specific data sets to be able to then really show accuracy and improve accuracy, say within asthma or silicosis or COPD or pneumonia, all of which we are currently collecting data sets with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation funding a study for us to be able to expand into these new areas. But yes, there is a lot of reuse. And I think the biggest thing that you can reuse is our technical team's know-how on understanding audio processing and all the model architecture that we've investigated that, we're dead ends. And there's a lot of technical know-how that you've developed in audio processing for disease detection. And now we can just repeat that for the next disease vertical, which
Yes.
is our development plan.
And oftentimes knowing what to do and what not to do is just as important as knowing what to do in these
For
cases.
sure.
You spoke about the diversity of your data set being important. I mean, AI models are known to degrade once you expand. You guys are going into Vietnam, you are going into Zambia. The population dynamics are going to change. How are you going to ensure that the model doesn't degrade as it's exposed to new data sets?
Yeah, I mean, this is as you said, it is a classic problem as to how well does the model translate to new demographics. And the entry process is typically preceded with a data collection in sort of a research environment in at least the regional space, if not in country. So to get regional data is important to assess the translation into a new environment. So that's what we're doing. We're actually doing a study with Stop TB, which is one of the World Health Organization's technical partners, in nine different countries across sub-Saharan Africa, South and Southeast Asia, to get this data in these different jurisdictions, the different demographics, but also at the same time validate that our model is performing to a similar level of accuracy, or at least a sufficient amount of accuracy for utility in those countries.
So you've got approval now from the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority, and that's a significant milestone. But if you're going to go global, what's the path towards global certification for you?
Yeah, it's a very tricky one when you're targeting the developing markets, because there's not much harmonization. Like in Europe, you can go for CE, and it's sort of a lot easier to get into all the countries thereafter with that sort of
Yes.
foundational approval. So our approach is we're actually doing Singapore's HSA regulatory approval. We're currently preparing for that. And they've got a relatively mature regulatory approval for AI models, which is a very important thing. You don't want to get stuck with regulators that don't really understand how to regulate your product. But then what you do is you basically create an application file. It's called like a dossier that you submit for product approval. And the one that we need to do for HSA, which is the Singapore sort of FDA kind of equivalent, is it's very portable to most of Southeast Asia and to sub-Saharan Africa. So you can reuse that sort of pack of application. And then you actually need to go somewhat one by one through the countries and do this application. But once you get the sort of foundational one, a lot of the countries sort of accelerate that approval. And in some cases, they have reciprocal approval as well. I think what's really important to cover in sort of our international journey is there's another like non-regulated it's not a regulatory approval or requirement, but it's an accelerator that's really important to entering into these countries. And that's the World Health Organization endorsement or recommendation of your product. So what that does is it influences country policy significantly. A lot of the countries follow the World Health Organization policy, and then you automatically become sort of a desirable manufacturer because they need this product because it's in their policy. But yes, the other major aspect is there's the Global Fund. The Global Fund provides a significant amount of funding to governments for their malaria, HIV, tuberculosis, and recently COVID-19 health programs. And they'll only give you money for a particular, well, governments can only utilize Global Fund money if that product is listed on the Global Fund procurement list.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And to get on the Global Fund procurement list, you need World Health Organization recommendation.
I see.
So,
okay, so that's a very important one for you. Yes.
Very important part of our regulatory pathway is to, while we seek in-country approval, we also need to unlock the ability to procure the product with Global Fund financing.
So speaking to that now, does that mean that your customer will change? I mean, who's buying it? Who are you selling the product to at the moment? And if you become a matter of policy in different countries, that means that then your customers change to being national governments, right?
Correct. Primarily, our customers now are private customers that are either serving underserved areas. So we've got a few nurse-led clinics where they're similar to a state facility, but operating privately, and then occupational health service providers. You know, tuberculosis screening is actually, tuberculosis is an occupational health disease, and mines have to screen mine workers and contractors for tuberculosis. It's an obvious customer. And then we also have some pharmacies that are also conducting screening with the product. But you're right, there will be a migration to, you know, the ideal impact, the maximum impact we can make is in the public sector. That's where most of tuberculosis is managed, most of it is identified, and where there's a huge amount of cost associated towards the disease and identifying it late. You know, having patients die from late detection, but also they continue to spread the disease, you know, for yes, 2 to 3 months before they eventually identify it. So identifying patients early in the state sector would drastically reduce the state cost of intensive care and things like this, and naturally the patient's suffering and their community's chance of infection. So, yeah, there will be this transition, but I think we will always maintain this private sector servicing capability. And I think that's what's quite unique about our product. X-rays are expensive. And to be able to warrant that upfront capital cost, you need to be doing a lot of TB screenings. So some of the high throughput facilities in South Africa and you know, across our target countries do have X-ray in place. And they're, you know, it's only warranted if you're doing 30 screenings a day, can you like financially yes, cover this tool? And that doesn't work in the private sector. That level of screening doesn't happen. The nurse-led clinics maybe only see 20 patients a day, let alone, you know, screen them all for tuberculosis. So we've got an additional model. We can service that high throughput model, and we kind of mirror what is typically purchased in a way there from a software license fee, but then obviously a significantly reduced hardware. But then in the private sector, we have a per-use screening yes, model that allows them, you know, if you're just doing four, five, six screenings a day, you can still warrant this product. You know, there's still a value proposition for you. You don't need to pay for this unlimited screening package, which is, you know, outside the price value to your particular institution.
Okay, but just to clarify, obviously the device cost is low enough that they can pay for the device outright and own it. What they would be paying for per per use is obviously the software and the hit to the cloud where the analysis is done.
Yeah, so we actually package the hardware in the license fee. So it's essentially like a rental and license fee. You know, they're able to, essentially they don't need to front any capital. They can pay at the end of the month and you know, depending on the throughput, it would cost them roughly between 12 and 20 Rand per screening. That's what they would be paying us. And these private groups, depending on their throughput, are typically charging between 50 to 100 Rand per tuberculosis screening. So, you know, they're able to service their patients. They're able to make an operating profit on it. And we're able to sustainably service them, even though they're doing small throughput. And that's like, it's that area where we're missing so many TB patients, you know. When somebody's really sick or when you're slightly sick, you go to the pharmacy, you know, and you have a cough, you should be screened there for TB. But instead, you get your cough mixture, you know, you struggle with this thing for a while. And 2 months later, when you're really sick, you go to the clinic, you eventually get picked up for TB. And, you know, your family's been exposed and your community has been exposed to TB for 2-3 months. So, you know, that's a big part of cutting the disease at the knees.
Yes. It's so cheap that you can use it as a first line kind of measure.
Exactly. Replace symptom-based screening.
Yes. So looking at the raise that you recently, the 85 million that we mentioned earlier, the Steel Foundation and Hope led the founding round. Are there benefits to the relationships that have been created there, and how can they help you as you plan to scale?
Yeah, huge benefits. The Steel Foundation for Hope it's a impact aligned investment fund. So if you look at their portfolio companies, they're often doing similar work to us, you know, maybe not actually in healthcare, but in the same environments, or you know, we're focusing on diagnosis, another group might be focusing on physical mobile pop-up clinics, and we can work together. So there's a lot of synergies with their portfolio group. But I think the major one is being able to focus on our business objectives without being like pulled to developed market applications the whole time, you know, as a pure financial investor. They see the value, and you need to be financially sustainable. You need to be making their money back, of course, and better.
Yes.
But they also contribute, like, the impact that we're making on society as part of the returns, which helps us keep true to our mission.
Okay. So just looking at your competitive environment, right? So the World Health Organization endorses a chest X-ray for TB screening. How do you position yourself? Do you position yourself against or alongside this? And how does that work?
Yeah, so against primarily. So with similar detection accuracy, the comparison is then on time throughput, which we've discussed. And then I think the major one is cost. And then the other one is user. Like, instead of a radiologist user, a nurse or community health worker being the user is a massive access enhancer. There's also like the mobility of our product. So there's a lot of active TB screening programs that are coming out where it's not just seated in the primary healthcare facility, but, you know, vans going out and doing screening days and things. And, you know, we can go to the extreme of someone going out on a motorbike and screening patients with our stethoscope. So primarily, I guess in competition and in a way, we would likely fill more of the lower throughput facilities at first, where they just can't afford the X-ray. And then as the evidence continues to grow, would, you know, become more one or the other. There's also opportunity for complementary screening. So, there are, although we're both looking at those pathological changes in the lungs, X-ray is looking at them visually, we're looking at them
Yes.
The audio signature of sort of the same thing, but there are some things where X-ray is better at seeing, and some things where it's easier to detect the sound than to see it visually on X-ray. So there's an opportunity in the future to assess complementary capability, and we are actually working with a X-ray CAD system, X-ray AI system, to see just doing comparison studies to see how different our predictions are and whether combining the two may elevate the detection accuracy.
So looking at the stethoscope, it hasn't changed much in 200 years, and now you are, I would describe this as a step change in the function of a stethoscope. Was AI critical to you, to your ability to do this?
Yeah, for sure. So the major step, to use your word, would be the stethoscope is useful at collecting information from the patient's body. It then relies on the collector, the one who's the earphones are plugged into their ears or the earpiece. You rely on their brain to interpret those lung sounds and then make a conclusion. So what are we doing? We're using the stethoscope for the collection process, but we're now outsourcing the mental analysis of that audio to an AI model. And what that allows for is two major things. One is being able to have different users. Everyone can place a stethoscope on your chest. Not everyone can have listened to thousands of recordings to know what TV sounds like or not. So we're able to sort of democratize that skill or disseminate that skill across multiple different users. The second thing is there's also a level of consistency or objectivity when you have essentially we've put like the same brain in all of these stethoscopes, whereas it's quite difficult to build strong healthcare systems when you have different clinician skill levels varying on how they analyze sound, where now it's far more consistent. So you can really understand, like, if you use this tool, this is how accurate it is. And you can see this with X-ray. The radiologist X-rays, if you speak to a radiologist in South Africa who's in a high TB prevalent area, they really know how to detect TB
Yes.
quite well. But if you speak to somebody who's in an area where they've seen maybe three TB cases in their life, that same radiologist, same X-ray machine has a completely different accuracy when it comes to tuberculosis. By packaging it in an AI, it brings us consistency.
Also, if you're
Objectivity.
spreading your data set widely, as you are going global now, an error detected in one part of the world benefits the entire data set, so that communities everywhere else in the world will be able to, get more accurate diagnoses. Brendan, if you were to see yourself or the Ostium device in every primary health clinic in the world by 2030, how do you think you'd achieve that?
I think to achieve that, we would need to, one, go beyond tuberculosis from a product perspective. That essentially you'd be able to do a single examination, single listening examination, and then have multiple screening results. I think that would elevate the value proposition to a newer or a larger customer base. So that would be the one key aspect. The other major one is partnerships with the in-country distributors. Realistically, trying to sell in India as a South African company is like virtually impossible. So we would have to essentially copy paste our business model into a lot of different countries and spread it like that or through a strong distribution model in different countries. And then I think our approach is from a business perspective, the question is, well, Why are these other stethoscopes in? So the US, there are a couple of stethoscopes that are also building AI models, sort of taking this step. Why won't they be in the clinics? Why would we be? I guess that would be the next question. And the major difference is, well, who we've designed for. They're primarily designed for specialists. So it's a completely different target market and difficult to then convert from that place to then work for nurses and community health workers. But the other thing is, because we're, be ironically, because tuberculosis is our starting point and focus, and because it's such a large disease and it affects the 80% of the population, the larger population, not the initially financially rich population, but the data-rich population, if you were to call it that. Our rollout for tuberculosis gives us access to generate much larger training data sets. And as we've discussed, the size of your training data set is plays an enormous role on how accurate your AI model can be. So by actually functioning in these larger populations, we're able to build much larger, robust data sets, build better AI models, and that's really what the decision comes down to in the end. It's yes, if you need regulatory approval and you need the right distributors, and but if you look at a healthcare system, the changes in accuracy make a massive difference to the impact on the population and the impact on the cost. So that's really what we would compete on, and having the largest training data set is what would give us that competing advantage.
Brendan, it's been a pleasure learning about you and your business. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's lovely talking to you.
Pleasure. That is Brendan van Breda. He is the CEO of AI Diagnostic, and this is the Tech Central Show.